The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Lynette's Shrimp House, located in Highland Park. It's Metro Detroit's premier destination, serving juicy fried shrimp, fish, and wings, alongside soul food sides and new additions to the menu, like turkey tacos and desserts. Located at 13548 Woodward in Highland Park, just north of the Davison, Lynette's is open for takeaway noon to 8 Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Call now, get some Lynette's. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with me on this Monday. And if you are like me, you spent a good portion of your time this weekend and, of course, the weekend before watching college hoops. We are in the midst of the NCAA tournament. The final eight is now set. And unlike previous years, we don't know who the final four is quite yet. Two more days until we figure that out. Of course, games today and tomorrow, including one with our Michigan Wolverines, who have made it to the Elite Eight for the fourth time since 2013, which is a big deal for them. Unfortunately, certain teams that we will talk about momentarily did not make the final eight, and that would be, of course, the Syracuse Orangemen. Matt Friedman is my guest, by the way. He is a principal at Tanner Friedman, which is a PR agency, but he's also a huge hoops junkie and a big fan, of course, of the Orange. My apologies, Matt. They played a tough game, but the shots just were not falling for the Orange.
No, you got to score more than 40-some points to win a tournament game. Everybody knows that. The better team won that game, but I did have an unexpected and fun run as a fan. The great thing, I mean, I love the NCAA tournament and have since I was a kid and kind of set my life around it at this time of the year. And it's so much better when my school is in it and part of it and relevant. And I got that this year, so I can't complain. And I grew up a Michigan fan, and this has been a lot of fun too. Everybody who thought that the program would drop off was wrong.
Yeah, they certainly were wrong. Juwan Howard has the Wolverines playing some amazing basketball right now, and we'll talk about their chances in just a little bit. But and I just want to give the audience a little clue here. We're going to talk, obviously, about this year's tournament, but we're also going to talk about the shifting landscape in college athletics, because this could be one of the last tournaments that sort of looks just like this. Obviously, this is not the way they want to do it, given COVID and everything else, but there's big changes coming to college sports here, whether they like it or not, whether the NCAA wants it or not. And we'll get into some of that in just a bit. But let's talk tourney, first of all. Yes, you grew up a Michigan fan, as did I. My dad went to the University of Michigan, and so we've been fans ever since I can remember. They're good. They looked really, really good against Florida State yesterday. I was concerned about that game, yet Michigan just – they played their game beautifully, and Florida State was just never really in it.
Florida State's a really talented team that relies a lot on brawn and toughness, and skill beat toughness. Just like against LSU, skill beat athleticism. What this Michigan team has in skill is something we're almost not used to seeing in college basketball in the era where players grow up on the AAU circuit, where flash tends to win and get attention. The fact that this team runs set plays and practiced plays and shares the ball, it's kind of an old school team. And if you have talent plus skill, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think that's what we've seen with this Michigan team all season. They brought in some grad transfers, experienced guys who fit right in cohesively. And they're just pretty amazing to watch, because it feels like they can beat just about anybody. Now, the question is, what's going to happen as they advance in the tournament and play teams just as skilled as they are?
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like they're going to be seeing that. They'll be seeing that at the Elite Eight at the earliest.
Well, Baylor and Gonzaga. Baylor and Gonzaga look like the class of the tournament at this point. I mean, both teams have been, lights out all season. Obviously, Michigan was a bit of a surprise. We weren't expecting them to be this good this year, but Hunter Dickinson at center has made a huge difference for the Wolverines. And, the opposing teams have to spend so much time defending him that the perimeter guys are getting open shots with just an extra pass or two, and they're finding ways to drain those shots. And we all thought Michigan may be dead in the water without Isaiah Livers able to play in the tournament, but they have been rallying around each other, and they seem to be capable, again, as you say, of beating anybody. Obviously, they got to get past UCLA tomorrow night, which is going to be a tough test.
You mentioned the extra pass or two. That's just huge for this team, is these guys are unselfish and they'll make those extra passes so the guy who has the best shot is taking the best shot. And we see a lot of teams in college basketball year in and year out, even during the tournament, that won't do that. You also mentioned Hunter Dickinson, enormously important. I talk about skill. He's probably exhibit A. I mean, a lot of freshmen, big guys come into college basketball and they don't have the strength or they don't have the coordination to be able to play the game. And he just stepped in and just picked up where older guys would have left off. And it's really impressive and exceptional.
Well, you know, I want to talk about something here for just a second, because you brought up graduate transfers. We talk about one of the big changes that the NCAA has seen in the last few years, opening up that transfer portal so players can move about without having to sit out a lot of time. They can get right into a new team has really, I think, evened the landscape in college ball quite a bit. So some of the smaller schools maybe are able to get a guy that they couldn't recruit when he was a freshman, you know, or a senior in high school, but maybe he's not getting the playing time he wants at one of the big schools. So he'll transfer to a mid-tier school and instantly make that team better. And it seems to me that, you know, allowing these players some of this freedom to do this has evened things out, especially in college basketball, in a way that we don't see in football.
Fans aren't going to like this, because sports fans in general don't really like change. We like this to be like how it was when we fell in love with it when we were kids. But there's a lot of change happening now. We can talk as much or a little bit about this as you'd like, because I look at it from a communication standpoint,
sure,
as well as a fan standpoint. But the transfer portal in college basketball especially is with us in a really big way. About a quarter of the sport right now is in the transfer portal. And what that means for people who don't follow it closely is these are players raising their hands and saying, I want to transfer. And I want it known within the sport that I'd like to transfer. And the reasons for that are many. It used to be that a transfer was an extreme situation because of a personal hardship or a really
a coaching bad change or something like that. You know,
something like that. And now It could be as simple as, I think I'll get more playing time someplace else. Or this coach that recruited me has moved to someplace else. By the way, the coaches complain about this, but they brought it on themselves, because coaching contracts in college sports have become meaningless. They all have buyouts. They all have all kinds of out provisions, and coaches move around like crazy, and players were basically stuck in one place unless they wanted this exception to be able to transfer, and then they'd have to sit out a year and wouldn't be able to play. So now they can basically come and go as they please, just like the coaches. And what you're going to see in pretty much every program are guys coming in and guys coming out. Then there are these graduate transfers. And these are players who have graduated but not completed their eligibility as players. So they're able to go to a program for 1 year and work on a master's degree. That's what Michigan took care of this year. And what that means is really experienced players who really had a lot of minutes in real college games are now getting a chance to step in and help a different program, maybe at a higher level or a better quality.
Well, I mean, when you look at the field for this year, and I wonder how much of that is responsible for the fact that, you know, we don't see some of the big names. Kentucky, you know, is not doing anything this year. North Carolina, the ACC doesn't have any teams left. You know, Duke, teams that traditionally would be there year in and year out are not. And I'm wondering how much of this is due to the fact that for years, a lot of these schools would recruit so-called one and done players, guys who were like, hey, I'm on my way to the NBA. I'm going to play 1 year at Kentucky and then I'm going to be gone. Where you've got teams now like Michigan, again, taking advantage of this, getting experienced players in there that are willing to play more team oriented basketball.
It could be. What you're going to see is even a step beyond that in the next few years. The G League, which is coming to Detroit, we're getting a team here in Detroit called the Motor City Cruise. They hired a general manager last week, former Syracuse assistant Rob Murphy, who had been at Eastern Michigan for the last decade, is their head coach. And so the NBA is going to run their own player development league. They're not going to rely on the colleges to do it exclusively for them anymore. So what's going to happen is the top handful of prospects every year are going to bypass college basketball. And they're going to go right into the NBA system and play under the NBA's auspices. What you're going to have in college are guys who need to be playing in college or want to be in college and play basketball. And that is going to accentuate that trend even more. And you're going to see much more of a balance across the country than you have now, where the so-called blue bloods are responsible for so much of the winning.
Yeah. And I wonder, though, I mean, I don't see that as something that's necessarily going to take away from the competitiveness and the enjoyment of college basketball. If anything, you have players who may stick around a little bit longer, get a chance to, you know, really endear themselves to the fans of those teams. That's not a bad thing.
No, you're just not going to have the big names. You know, the guy who hits the big shot in the NBA playoffs, you may not remember an equivalent moment in college the way you did with Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Isaiah, sure, those guys. That's going to be different. But you know what? That's been the case in the NBA now for a long time, because you look in LeBron James and others where we don't have college memories of them. And so it's just going to be different. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing the G League in Detroit. I think it's going to be a fun way on a winter's night to spend 10 or 12 bucks and go see some pretty good basketball.
You know, baseball's been doing it this way forever. They've had a minor league system that has always fed the pipeline, and college was sort of an afterthought for a lot of these athletes. You know, the NBA Developmental League, you know, the G League, as it's called, hasn't really taken off the same way that minor league baseball has in a number of ways. Do you see that changing? And is there a situation where you're going to have better fan turnout for these games and two, more interest?
I don't think the NBA cares too much about getting these games on TV and getting fans there. I think that's gravy. What they're interested in is player development. If you go back to the Bad Boys Pistons, for example, Chuck Daly had two assistant coaches. You look at an NBA bench now, and there's practically a one-to-one ratio of assistant coaches to players. The NBA is in the player development business now. So the Detroit's a great example. You're going to have the Pistons playing at Little Caesars Arena. You'll have their G League team, the Crews, playing at Wayne State, not far away, and they're going to be practicing in the same practice facility there in New Center, all under one roof and all under one system. That's what they're really interested in. If junkies like us go to see the games, or even happen to watch them on some obscure stream or cable channel, that's a bonus for them.
Well, I mean, obviously the NCAA doesn't necessarily like this, because it sort of, you know, loosens their monopoly on college basketball players. And for a long time, if you wanted to play in the NBA, you had to go to college. You had to play somewhere. That doesn't happen now. The NBA, to compete, is actually considering allowing players to make money while they are playing in college, which has been, you know, verboten for so long. There are real discussions that are being pushed, not necessarily by them. I think they're accepting some of these changes. Congress is even getting involved to allow kids to make money off their name, image, and likeness.
It's not the law in Michigan.
Exactly.
The Michigan legislature, which couldn't agree on much last year, agreed on this, and the governor here signed it. And I'm working with a couple of clients on this now, including one who's consulting athletic programs, as well as getting prepared to consult athletes and their parents on how to take advantage of this. And again, I talk about change, and change for us as sports fans is hard. Change in higher education, and I've seen this over 20 plus years of working with universities, it's really hard. They're used to very
slow. It's like getting the ship out of the Suez Canal.
Very slow, incremental change, committee studies, outside recommendations, and this change is being foisted really upon them by state legislatures and ultimately by Congress. Cory Booker, former Stanford football player, is the one really pushing it there. And what it's going to result in is that players are going to be able to do things like sell their own T-shirts with their face and their catchphrase on it, get paid for appearances at car dealerships and pizza places and the kinds of things that radio DJs have been paid for on the side for years and years. And, you know, it's commercial endorsements. Some of them will be small and some of them will be big. You know, makes me wonder, in a place like East Lansing, will there be more opportunities for athletes than there would be in a place like L.A. for UCLA athletes? It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very competitive. It's going to increase the transfers, and it's going to change recruiting. And as fans and as alumni and as parents, we're going to have to get used to this. It's coming.
Well, you know, and I think it was Florida that was the first state that really pushed this to allow their athletes, you know, athletes that come to universities in Florida to make money off their, again, name, image, likeness. And you can't have one state doing that. I mean, every team in Florida would just be stacked with the best talent, the kids who actually might be able to make some sort of money off their name. And so the NCAA almost have to do something on this, don't they?
They have to.
I mean, yeah,
they will. And there's a court case in front of the Supreme Court that will impact this that's being heard, I believe, in the next week. So what I've been saying to friends and to clients and to fans is pay attention. This is coming. Don't be surprised by this. It could be as simple as if you want to take your kid to get a selfie at a store someplace with their favorite player, you may have to pay a few bucks, and that money will for the first time go into the player's pocket. Those sorts of things are coming.
Now, here's a question, and I, you know, as somebody who has always sort of been baffled by the NCAA's process of investigation about whether or not players are improperly receiving benefits from boosters and things like this, is this something that might lessen the temptation for some of these people to violate the NCAA's rules on this? Because, you know, things like the Fab Five, what happened to the Fab Five, what happened to a number of basketball programs and football programs over the years might not necessarily be illegal under this.
I think what you're seeing, Craig, in this regard is what you've been talking about in your show and other areas of society now for a year or two. If you look at the legalization of recreational marijuana in a state like Michigan, if you look like the legalization of sports gambling and the ubiquity now of sports gambling, you're taking behavior that used to exist in the shadows and you're putting it out in front and you're creating rules around it so that it happens in public. And I think that compensation of some sort for college athletes is doing the same thing. And you're right. We've been talking about this since the Fab Five. There was the anecdote in the book about Chris Webber seeing his jersey in the window for sale and knowing that everybody was making money on that practically but him. Under these new initiatives, that's going to change. The question is, how do you regulate it? John Bacon, who's an author who lives here in Southeast Michigan, sure, and writes about college sports a lot, makes the analogy that I've never heard anybody else quite make. And that is the NCAA is both the saloon keeper and the sheriff in this town. So how's it going to work when they make the rules? They're supposed to enforce the rules and they're the ones collecting money on all of it.
But there's also an equity question here, because some obviously players are going to have huge opportunities and others are not. And I mean, basketball at its heart, just it is a team game. So you could have, yes, a star player who makes the appearances, does all that kind of stuff, but the other players may still be in a situation where they are scrounging for meal money, as we have seen for years and years in college sports. Is there any discussion about how to make that a more equitable situation?
That's a question I've asked my clients who are working on this, and there's a lot yet to be determined. The other equity question is gender equity. There's a chance that at high-profile sports programs, the guys are going to make a lot more money than the women are. Or maybe depends on the program. You look at a place like Lincoln, Nebraska, women's volleyball is probably more popular than men's basketball at the University of Nebraska. So those women could potentially make some money in endorsements. But it's certainly going to be uneven across the sport, and that's one of the things that will have to be contended with. So what my advice is really is prepare for change. Everybody is going to be affected by this change somehow, whether you're a fan at home or you work for the university or you're a player or a parent of a player. And the time is now to start thinking differently about this and trying to prepare somehow.
Well, I'm glad you brought up women's sports, because you are a PR guy. And, you know, the NCAA really screwed up this year with the inequities between the men's facilities and the women's facilities for the tournament. You know, the weight room was perhaps the most visible symbol of the differences there. But we're talking about, you know, less quality meals. The swag bags were different. Treating the women's tournament as a second class tournament, as opposed to what they're doing for the men. And their response to it was bad.
Sure was.
They basically said, well, there wasn't the room that they needed to make the facilities equal, but that's not what the law says they need to do. So the NCAA still gets in its own way a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, this was a very embarrassing situation for them that could have been handled very simply once it was discovered. And Mark Emmert, the head of the NCAA, made the situation worse by not staying on message and by backtracking and hemming and hawing. Fact of the matter is they had a problem. The problem was revealed. They needed to fix the problem and communicate how they were not going to be in that situation again. And they really struggled to do that. The fact of the matter is the women's NCAA tournament is now a bona fide sporting event in this country. It took a long time, but you know, Michigan's game on Saturday afternoon against Baylor, which by the way was a great game.
It was a great game.
Yeah. Was on ABC. It was on network TV. This wasn't on some obscure stream that you needed some password and know somebody to try to get to watch. And the production quality, by the way, the broadcast and the announcing, which was an almost an entirely female crew, was terrific. So the NCAA needs to realize that they have a valuable property in the women's tournament too. It's not the cultural institution that the men's tournament is, but it deserves their resources.
Well, yeah. And you know, I've always wondered how they could find a way to blend the two more carefully. I mean, because it would be great if you know, you had the finals like in the same location. And on the day of the final game, you had the women's game and the men's game for the people who bought tickets. You get to see both finals. I mean, I think that's something that they could do that would be a really, really great way to make people pay more attention to it. Why not?
But they were selling out. I mean, if you look at 2019 and the years before that, they were selling out big arenas with the women's tournament.
True.
And they're playing in big cities. Yeah, so
they don't have to be in the same location. I mean, but how about the same day, same network? Here's, you know, one game and then here's the next one. I just think that would be kind of neat.
Yeah, that could be fun. ESPN has had a really good experience financially and otherwise televising the women's tournament. And I think a lot of fans are choosing it over the NIT, for example.
Oh yeah.
When they want that basketball fix and the men's NCAA tournament is not on.
All right. We don't have a ton of time left, but I did want to ask you about this. You know, Indiana announced a new coach the other day, taking somebody from the ranks of the NBA, following Michigan's lead. And I'm starting to see a lot of that college team saying, we want to pluck a coach from the NBA because these are people that know what it's going to take to get players to the NBA. And the guys who are coming to college, you know, they want to know that there's a pathway, you know, to the next level. It seems that that's going to be a trend that we see more often.
Sports does copycat just like business does. We see this in business all the time where one company has a successful hire and they have a home run hire, so to speak, and then it gets copied by their competitors. We saw this in baseball. Mike Matheny gets hired, no managing experience. He was a former catcher, wins a World Series with the Cardinals. And so Dave Dombrowski here in Detroit hires Brad Ausmus, a similar profile.
Didn't work out that way.
And so, you know, now everybody wants the next Juwan Howard. And is Mike Woodson the next Juwan Howard? Probably not. And I think Texas is talking to Royal Ivy, and they're looking for the same kind of thing. And the fact of the matter is, maybe Juwan Howard is an aberration, or maybe he's the beginning of a trend. We'll find out. But sports does copycat just like every other facet of business does too.
All right. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left here, and I do want to talk about the rest of this tournament because we've got games today and tomorrow. I don't mind the Monday and Tuesday. I kind of like it. It gives me something to think about on a Monday, which is a lot of fun. But who do you like the rest of the way here? The number one seeds seem to be, for the most part, with the exception of Illinois, doing what they were supposed to do.
I mean, I like Michigan against UCLA. I know UCLA's beaten everybody and they've been on a great run. But
I like this Jaime kid over there. He's amazing to watch. That overtime performance by UCLA the other night was great.
Terrific. But I think in a short preparation, I go with skill. It's really hard for the whole thing to go against Gonzaga. I always have said the college basketball teams have to lose along the way. I'm not sure that this one does. If they did, it would make this really interesting, but it's just hard to go against them. It's been hard all season to go against them. They seem to have really the complete package. The only thing they did not do was play a really tough schedule during the conference season. Not their fault. It's the conference they're in.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about college basketball. Unlike football, a team like Gonzaga actually can compete for a national championship. That's just something that doesn't happen in football. And maybe we'll see some changes in that route with transfers and stuff like that. But, you know, it'd be nice if there was like a MAC team that was capable of competing with the big guys in college football. It would be nice to see some of these smaller conferences actually have some representation in football. And that's a tougher
game. You don't like Clemson and Alabama every year?
No, I don't.
Gotta wake up from that. Yeah.
But you know, hey, if I was an Alabama fan, I'd probably think it was the best thing ever. But hey, what are you gonna do? All right, Matt Friedman. Again, he is the principal at Tanner Friedman Public Relations and a good friend and also a basketball junkie. Sorry that the Orange are not going to be there in the Elite Eight, but you do have your Wolverines to fall back on, right?
Yeah, I don't look at it as a fallback. I look at it as a bonus.
Yeah,
and exactly. I'm looking for, I mean, I'm already starting to have text threads starting about Syracuse for next year. That's just the way it works as a fan.
Absolutely, it does. Well, we appreciate it, sir. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks, Craig.
All right. And this has been the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. A quick note, please send me an email, thecraigfollyshow@gmail.com. You can find me on social media. I'm all over the place there. Send me a message about what you want to hear, who you want me to talk to, comments about what you like, dislike about the show. It's all good. I like hearing from you. So we'll talk again this week. See you soon. Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com for one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to DeadlineDetroit.com/membership.